Oral questions by members.
The Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Premier has said that British Columbians can expect more flexibility as they are vaccinated. But those who are living in seniors' care, those who have been vaccinated, are still experiencing the stress of loneliness, and there is significant concern about their mental wellness. Anna Van Blankenstein lives in a long-term care facility. She's been vaccinated. Her husband, who lives in the same facility, has had COVID and received his first vaccine. But she gets one 30-minute visit a month with him. And I quote, "The visit is grim. I have to be masked. My husband and I cannot reach out for one another. There is a chaperone sitting about 14 feet away who can overhear everything we say, and she's there to prevent any kind of infraction," end quote. When will seniors see the flexibility the Premier has promised?
Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Honourable Speaker, and thank you to the Leader of the Opposition for her question, one she knows that I'm very interested in and have been working on, and the Provincial Health Officer as well. As we proceeded with our vaccination plan, we made it clear that changes were coming with respect to visitation in long-term care and in terms of activity in long-term care. Some of those changes have already taken place within long-term care facilities, and we will be announcing before the end of March the changes to visitation in long-term care.
Leader of the Official Opposition on supplemental.
Well, thank you very much to the Health Minister, and I know that I have expressed my thanks to him on a number of occasions for the number of issues that he's tackling. But the issue of essential visitors has been one that families across British Columbia have been grappling with for months now. The seniors advocate has been clear that the province needs to change the visitation rules to protect the mental health of residents. Isabel McKenzie says, and I quote, "Really, we should be able to return to in-room visits," end quote. The Centre for Disease Control has offered new guidelines, as have many other jurisdictions. Our most vulnerable population has suffered tremendously over the last year. No one is asking for long-term care homes to be thrown wide open. Families just want and need to see their loved ones. As Cliff Jones said, whose mother-in-law is in a care home, said, and I quote, "I call them inmates because we feel that they are in confinement," end quote. So when specifically will families in British Columbia who have loved ones in long-term care receive the promised flexibility that the Premier made?
Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Honourable Speaker, and that experience, the experience of families who have dealt with the pandemic and long-term care and all of its impacts, know its significance to the both the physical and the mental health of residents of long-term care, of workers in long-term care, and of family members, of people and friends, of people living in long-term care. It's why British Columbia gave such priority to vaccination in long-term care, a vaccination that has been extraordinarily successful and well implemented by our teams of healthcare workers. 96% of our workers, 95% of our residents have received their first dose vaccinations from COVID-19. In addition, thousands of essential visitors have also been immunized in order to assist with their role in long-term care. I told the member, I think specifically, today is March 22nd, that the changes will be announced before the end of March, meaning in the next 8 days. And it's our hope that these changes will return some normalcy in long-term care. I agree with her, it can't be fully back to normal. But obviously the Provincial Health Officer, the Ministry of Health, myself, and many, many other people want to see this change happen. I know the Leader of the Opposition does, and I expect to be briefing on her on it within the next few days, the new changes that will be put into effect to allow more visits in long-term care.
Member for Kelowna Mission.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. So as seniors wait for the Minister of Health's promised flexibility, the demand for increased widespread rapid testing in care homes is increasing. While residents remain segregated, staff still go home and are a part of their community. Not all staff are choosing to vaccinate, which is their right. But it remains baffling as to why the Premier won't provide seniors with an extra layer of protection by implementing widespread rapid testing in long-term care homes. Will the Premier do the right thing and ensure long-term care homes have all the rapid tests that they need to protect residents?
Minister of Health.
Honourable Speaker, with respect to visitation and long-term care, I think I just answered that question, that seniors can expect to see changes. Residents in long-term care can be seen, expect to see changes within the week. A couple of weeks ago, we also announced changes to our approach to rapid testing. The member will know that rapid testing has been used in long-term care, but the key testing, the gold standard testing that we would all expect long-term care residents to receive, the PCR testing, has been in place for some time. I would note to the member that priority was given to vaccination and long-term care. I think something that she agrees with and everyone agrees with. And the consequence of that is there for all to see. As of today, there are two long-term care outbreaks in British Columbia active. There were 42 on January 15th. That shows the effectiveness of those measures and why we are now able to proceed with opening up long-term care to more visits.
Member for Kelowna Mission.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Well, I don't know if the Minister of Health heard me, because I'm not just asking for some rapid testing. I'm asking for widespread rapid testing. You see, headlines such as, and I quote, outbreak at Kelowna long-term home despite high uptake of immunizations, end quote, serve as a warning. Seniors have been vaccinated, but the virus is still finding its way into care homes. Keeping our seniors in virtual lockdown is not the way forward, especially when some simple steps the government could take to protect them is available. The BC care providers have been clear, and I quote, "We have been talking about the need for some sort of mechanism to ensure that unvaccinated workers do not pose a risk to residents. This is an area that is still weak, and we need to strengthen it," end quote. So again, to the Premier, will he do the right thing to protect seniors and increase rapid testing widespread at long-term care homes?
Minister of Health.
Honourable Speaker, the reports in other jurisdictions will show what happens when politicians, rather than people who are epidemiologists and involved in public health, make decisions about testing programs. Decisions are made to overturn the advice of those public health officials, and the consequences are negative. We've seen that in other jurisdictions in Canada. Here in British Columbia, when rapid testing came to our province, it was to be delivered on the advice of public health officials, and they have done their appropriate job using the gold standard PCR test, especially in long-term care, and using rapid tests in an expansive way as required. I've followed their advice on this question, and with great respect to the Honourable Member or others, I think that is the best approach to deal with the issue of testing in British Columbia. We are using rapid testing more, as we should. We are continuing to depend on testing in our response to the pandemic in British Columbia. But I think the member would agree that the impact of the measures we've taken in long-term care, all of the measures we've taken in long-term care, the single site order, the infection prevention, has meant that we have had lower levels of infection than almost any other equivalent jurisdiction in North America. That does not mean that we are happy or satisfied or anything else, but it means that our public health officials have been doing their absolute best and doing a good job. Can we do better? Absolutely. And we're going to continue to follow the guidance of public health officials with respect to testing.
Leader of Third Party.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. A few weeks ago, I asked the Minister of Health if we had any information about long-haul COVID rates in British Columbia, and if so, where the data was being posted for the public. The Minister said information about infections and recoveries is shared daily, but subsequent follow-up with Dr. Henry and the BC CDC by the press has clarified that we currently have no idea what proportion of patients continue to experience symptoms months after being diagnosed. Other jurisdictions who are tracking and reporting this data have found that at least 10%, if not closer to 30%, of COVID patients end up developing chronic symptoms. With a rolling average of over 500 and last week rising, British Columbians testing positive every day, this is a huge blind spot. We could end up with tens of thousands of people needing long-term support. My question through you, Honourable Speaker, is to the Minister of Health. It is not accurate to classify people as recovered if the virus has caused them to experience chronic physical or neurological symptoms. When specifically can British Columbians expect government to start reporting on rates of long-haul COVID, and what policy work is being done to ensure people with long COVID will get the supports they need?
Minister of Health.
Honourable Speaker, every case in British Columbia is important. Every case is followed and support is provided. We've put in place a number of clinics across British Columbia for people dealing with continuing conditions of COVID-19. When we refer to people as being of having their condition resolved, what we mean is that they're no longer infectious. This has been repeated again and again and again and again by Dr. Henry and myself. That is the meaning of that term when we use that term recovered. But I would say to people that COVID-19 is a vicious virus. It doesn't argue with us. It can have profound effects, whether you're 25 or 85. We know who has the most severe effects. That's often people with other medical conditions and our elders. But we know that the ongoing effect of this virus can be profound. We also know that the virus has only been around for a little more than a year. And so we continue to work with and study extensively, and the number of studies that's produced every day on the subject and the work done in British Columbia is comprehensive. So I would say to the member that I'm going to continue, as I said in the answer to the previous question, to rely on our public health officials to ensure that information is available, particularly for people at this time of high vulnerability of COVID-19, so that everyone understands the potential impact of this virus and everyone takes every step to ensure that every step is made to ensure that this virus is not transmitted.
Leader of the third party on supplemental.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. And the Health Minister identifies that people are being classified as recovered if they're no longer infectious. I think there are a lot of people in British Columbia who feel that their ongoing struggle with symptoms and them being lumped in as recovered is not actually capturing the experience that they're having. And they're wondering about what kind of supports they will get from a government that isn't acknowledging them in the data and the reporting. As we know, COVID long-haul patients report a wide variety of symptoms, from pain to brain fog to memory problems and insomnia, heart problems. And data from other countries that are tracking long COVID indicates that it affects more women than men. The minister speaks about being as mindful as possible, and we saw last week with case numbers rising and variants of concern spreading, there appears to be growing risk with students going back to classrooms next week and teachers not receiving vaccinations until April, and with a few weeks after that before immunity is conferred for teachers. It's hard not to be concerned about the prospect of teachers making it to this point in the pandemic only to be faced with the potential for the infection and long COVID. My question is to the Minister of Health. What adjustments is government considering in light of the rising case numbers and the continued call from teachers to implement a comprehensive mask mandate, better distancing in classrooms, and better ventilation?
Minister of Health.
Honourable Speaker, I would say to be very clear to the member, and we have been again and again and again on this subject, that when we refer to people having discontinued isolation, it doesn't mean that the effects of COVID-19 are over on a person, particularly people who are dealing with other medical conditions. This has been said from the beginning to suggest in any ways, the member just did, that that means that we are not concerned about it. It's just wrong to say that public health officials or medical health officers aren't concerned about it because we provide this information is just incorrect. And I just wanted to put that clearly and on the record. This is one of the most challenging times we face in our COVID-19 pandemic. We have an immunization campaign that I think is delivering in an effective way across the province based on the amount of vaccine we have. As of today, for example, in the Pfizer vaccine, 440,000 doses have been delivered to health authorities. 426,000 of them have been put in people's arms. That's extraordinarily effective. In our vaccination strategy, we laid out in detail for the honorable member last week. And we are going to continue to take steps, public health steps, to ensure that people are safe and as safe as possible around British Columbia. And I would like to say to everybody in British Columbia, now is the time when we need to continue to follow public health orders and public health guidance in every workplace, including schools. We need to follow robust public health plans and COVID-19 safety plans in every workplace. It's more important now than ever, as we see hope on the horizon, to ensure people are protected in a time of high transmission for COVID-19. And the provincial health officer and the Ministry of Health are going to continue to deliver on that agenda. And I am thankful to all British Columbians who are following that guidance to this day and beyond.
Thank you. Member for West Vancouver Capilano.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. New child care regulations come into effect on April 1st. They will be responsible for the loss of thousands of child care spaces. The changes will make many providers ineligible for government funding, and this will result in less spaces for parents. As a provider in Surrey just told me, as a result of this sudden change, we feel helpless and face economic ruin as we watch our life savings disappear because our dream to develop a child care center with over 100 new spaces has turned into a nightmare, end quote. Will the Premier press pause, sit down and talk to these operators before they're forced into bankruptcy?
Minister of State for Child Care.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and thanks to the opposition member for this very important question, which we need to remember that our government introduced the fee reduction program when we became government in 2017 and 2018, introduced the child care budget with over three dozens of initiatives to bring affordable, quality, inclusive child care to BC families. And the fee reduction program currently has over 90% of providers joining this program. And it is the first time in BC's history that we've brought down the cost of child care for BC families. And that is why we need to continue to make sure we can bring affordable childcare to more BC families and also provide a level playing field for providers that are currently in operation joining our fee reduction program, and also for new providers who are coming into this field, and to be able to make sure that they can set their fees at a reasonable amount. So this program, again, Honorable Speaker, is to ensure that we can pass the savings and the fee reduction for BC families. We are proud of the progress that we've made to bring affordable childcare to BC families after years and years of neglect of the childcare crisis by the member opposite and the former Liberal government.
Member for West Vancouver Capilano on supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to remind the minister that this government now is the previous government, and there comes a point where blaming things from prior to your being here echoes hollow, and this is the time. A new report was just released and highlighted that BC has, unlike what I just heard, some of the highest child care fees in British Columbia, and that is because there are not enough spaces. This government is failing. For years, this NDP government has promised $10 a day daycare and more spaces, but what they're doing right now is the opposite. Parents are paying more, and now providers are canceling a number of spaces that they had on the books to open. This government's April 1 changes are directly responsible for putting 2,100 spaces on hold at CEFA Early Learning alone. So the Premier, will he pause the April 1 changes and sit down with these child care providers?
Minister of State for Child Care to answer.
Thank you again, Honorable Speaker, and I am proud of the progress that our government has been made on childcare and making sure we can bring affordable childcare benefit to tens and thousands of families. Again, Well, I need to remember to remind the member opposite that our fee reduction program has over 90% of providers joining this program and passing on the savings to tens and thousands of BC families. And already in 3.5 years, we already have over 36,000 families benefiting from $10 a day childcare or less. And we have been accelerating the creation of spaces. We have never accelerated creation of spaces in BC's history in this way. We've created over 20,000 spaces in 3.5 years. And Honorable Speaker, I need to remind a member opposite that we have a very comprehensive childcare program with over 36 of new initiatives to bring affordable, quality, accessible childcare to BC families after years and years of neglect by the previous government, ignoring the childcare crisis. They have caused a chaos for a lot of BC families, and we are proud of the progress we have made. And again, the new policies to make sure that there is level playing field for all providers. We've heard a lot of current existing providers about how they will love to see that there's accountability mechanism for new providers joining and our new fee reduction program. And again, over 90% of providers are working with us to bring the cost down for BC families.
Thank you, Minister.
BC families are benefiting from affordable childcare. Thank you.
Member for Kamloops South Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, notwithstanding the minister's bluster there, there is a huge difference between rhetoric and action. This is the government which promised to actually deliver 24,000 new childcare spaces in 3 years. To this point, Mr. Speaker, they've delivered approximately 4,000 in 4 years, 4,000 spaces that actually have kids in them. This is a government that promised to deliver universal $10 a day childcare. And Mr. Speaker, that promise is missing in action. Now, the latest policy choices of this government, which take effect on April the 1st, are also going to serve to significantly reduce the number of new spaces that come online and increase costs for parents. Mr. Speaker, the largest operators in the province were not consulted on these significant changes. I'll give another example to the minister of one major operator and the decision that they're taking. Willowbrae has made the decision to not proceed at this point with 1,750 spaces, including 136 spaces in Maple Ridge, 160 in Port Coquitlam, 166 in Richmond, 180 in Burnaby. Will the premier stop these policy changes, which will only serve to have the effect of reducing access to new spaces and increasing costs for parents in British Columbia?
Minister of State for Childcare.
Thank you, Honorable Speaker. I am glad that the member talked about space creation, and let me remind the member opposite that we have been accelerating the creation of spaces across BC communities, the fastest ever in BC's history. And let me put that in perspective, Honorable Speaker, that we have been creating spaces. Again, over 20,000 spaces have been funded in 3.5 short years, and that is over 4.5 times more childcare spaces that the former BC Liberal government has ever funded in their last 4 years in government. And we definitely have more work to do, Honorable Speaker, to make sure more parents can return to work after, again, years of the childcare chaos that was neglected by the previous government. We need to make sure we need to accelerate the creation of spaces. We are well on target, and I definitely have more good news coming in the coming weeks to make sure that every single week, every single month, we are creating spaces, and those spaces are coming into operation in across BC communities. And speaking of the fee reduction program, again, 90% of providers joining this very important program. We need
to ensure
a level playing field for all providers, whether they're new or existing providers. Thank you, Honorable Speaker.
Member for Kamloops South Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, this is beginning to sound like the NDP's housing program, you know, where they talk about these tens of thousands of spaces, tens of thousands of units which have been created around the province. The only catch is there's no people in them. There's no people in them, Mr. Speaker. Less than 4,000 new childcare spaces have actually opened up in the last 4 years under this government. That's a terrible record. Mr. Speaker, Jennifer Ratcliffe is a mother of three children, and she's also the owner of a child care center in South Surrey. Jennifer writes, and I quote, "I have spoken to several daycare owners who have canceled expansions at Pebble Lane. I get six or seven calls daily from parents looking for care. It's heartbreaking having to turn them away. I find it greatly disheartening that the government would do this. You are going to crush the careers of so many women," end quote. So again, my question to the Premier is this: will the Premier pause these changes on April 1st? Will he talk to providers in the childcare space, operators like Jennifer, about the very negative impacts that this policy will have on the parents of British Columbia?
Minister of State for Childcare.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and let me remind a member opposite. We have been talking to providers across the province during the past few years since we became government. We have been talking to parents and learned about their struggles when the previous government neglected the childcare crisis, that women were unable to return to work, they were forced to give up their career. So many parents were struggling with the high cost of childcare, not having access to childcare after years and years of neglect. And we have been working hard to put together a comprehensive program with over three dozens of new initiatives to bring affordable, quality, inclusive early learning care system to all BC families. And again, we have been talking to providers and getting the feedback from existing providers about that they want to see a level playing field when they are joining our fee reduction program, passing up to $350 savings to parents. And those savings means a lot to parents. That's focus on the parents, Honorable Speaker. That $350 means that a lot of families have shared that they can put better food, healthier food on the table, making sure they can pay for their daily expenses. And we want to ensure those savings are passed to parents. And that is why we have set the new policy to make sure there's a level playing field for current providers, new providers that can set their fees at 7%. As the other 70% of providers in their community. Thank you.
Member for Fraser-Nicola.
Mr. Speaker, 4 years ago, the Premier made a flashy promise of $10 a day daycare. He hasn't delivered. All he did was pick winners and losers in communities across British Columbia with a handful of federal pilot sites. The federal funding expires on March 31st. Can the Premier tell parents what happens to the federal sites, and when will the province actually deliver $10 a day daycare as he promised?
Minister of State for Childcare.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. I hope the member opposite has heard my previous answers, that we have been delivering $10 a day childcare to over 36,000 families in this province. And there are more and more families that are benefiting from low or cost childcare. We have brought down the cost of childcare for this province and BC families through our three initiatives. Again, we have three dozens of new initiatives, including three major affordability measures: the fee reduction program that has 90% providers joining this program, the childcare, affordable childcare benefit that has brought down childcare costs significantly for a lot of parents who are making $70,000, $80,000 that can benefit from $10 a day, and up to the income of $111,000, benefiting a lot of middle income families. And we also have the prototype site that are testing how universal childcare can look like. And we already are getting a lot of positive results from families sharing that they can return to work, especially mothers who have historically struggled with childcare, that we have encouraged and supported a lot of more parents and women to return to the workforce. And we will continue to do the work. And I hope the member opposite will take a moment to read our comprehensive child care program, to read our child care plan that is being cost down to tens and thousands of BC families.
Thank you. Member for Fraser-Nicola on supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Parents desperately need child care spaces across British Columbia, but providers are canceling thousands of new spaces because what this two-term NDP government is doing on April 1st. $10 a day childcare was a central campaign promise 4 years ago, but they haven't delivered. We now have providers putting thousands of spaces on hold, and parents are paying more. Fewer spaces and higher fees. When will the Premier actually start delivering on his $10 a day daycare?
Minister of State for Childcare.
Thank you very much, Honorable Speaker. I know BC families and BC parents have been struggling with high costs of childcare. And as a parent with a young child myself, I know that struggle. And I know how that struggle is like as I continue to struggle with my own childcare. And while it is very encouraging to hear the member opposite asking so many questions about childcare, that's remember, it was their neglect of the childcare crisis that so many parents like myself have been really struggling with the cost of childcare and not being able to access to the spaces that they deserve. And that is why I'm so proud, again, of our government putting over $1.3 billion into the new investment into affordable, quality, early learning and care services. We already have been funded to 20,000 spaces across the province. And we already have 36,000 families that have been benefiting from $10 a day childcare. And with tens and thousands of more families have seen a reduction in their fees. And at the same time, we are building a comprehensive system, Honorable Speaker, that are supporting early childhood educators who are the workforce behind the workforce to make sure they get a wage enhancement. There's a lot more work to do, but I'm proud of the progress we have made today. Thank you.
The balance question period.